looking for, if only she hadn't seen the flicker of something else. Once he was gone, she shook her head, trying to make sense of the situation. Bane looked like a great hulking brute of a man, but there was wisdom and cunning beneath his heavy brow and bald skull. She thought back on the last 20 minutes, trying to determine when she had lost control of the situation. There had been sparks between them, just as she had intended. Bane had done nothing to hide his desire for her. She sensed the heat as he caressed her neck. Still, something had gone wrong with her carefully planned seduction. Was it possible she actually felt something for him? Githany unconsciously bit her lower lip. Bane was powerful, intelligent, and bold. She needed him if she was going to eliminate Sirach. But he had a knack for surprising her. He kept challenging and defying her expectations. She had to admit, she found him intriguing in spite of this. Or perhaps because of it. Bane was everything Keel hadn't been. Ambitious, impulsive, unpredictable. Despite her best intentions, some small part of her was drawn to him. And that, more than anything else, made him a very dangerous ally. Chapter 16. High atop the Temple of Korriban, beneath the light of a blood-red moon, two figures stood poised in silhouette. One human, one Twi'lek. A chill wind swept across the roof, but though both combatants had stripped off their robes to fight bare-chested, neither shivered from the cold. They might have been statues, still and hard as stone, were it not for the smoldering heat in their eyes. Without warning, the figures lunged, moving so swiftly, it would have been impossible for an observer to say which one acted and which reacted. They met with a thunderous crash of their savage blades. Even as he desperately fought to hold his ground, Bane was studying Cassim carefully. He was acutely aware of every feint and strike, analyzing and memorizing each block, parry, and counterstrike. The Blade Master had said his time would be better spent focusing on improving his own technique, but Bane was determined to negate Sirach's advantage by absorbing all he could from the Twi'lek's double-bladed fighting style. The exchange lasted well over a minute, with no break or lull in the action, until Bane spun away to regroup. He had sensed his attack slipping into an unconscious pattern, and predictability was death against an opponent as skilled as Cassim. He had fallen into that trap once the previous week. He wasn't about to make the mistake twice. The two combatants faced each other once again, motionless, save for their eyes, which flicked and darted in search of any sign they could use to gain some slight advantage. Over the past month, their training sessions had become less frequent, but far more intense. Part of Bane believed Cassim actually found value in sparring against him. The Blade Master had to grow bored crossing blades with apprentices and students so far beneath his own level. Of course, Bane had yet to land a telling blow against his master. But each time they sparred, he felt as if he was getting closer and closer to a victory. Cassim's form and technique were flawless, but Bane was aware that the slightest miscue was all the opening he needed. Both fighters were breathing hard. The session had gone far longer than any before it. Their battles typically ended when the Twi'lek landed a scoring blow, disabling one of his students' limbs with the burning Pelko venom. On this night, however, Cassim had yet to land such a blow. Cassim charged forward, and the clang and clash of their weapons rang out over the rooftop in a sharp staccato rhythm. They stood toe-to-toe, hammering away at each other, neither giving ground or quarter. Ultimately, Bane was forced to disengage, breaking off the melee before the Blade Master's superior skill broke down his defenses. This time, it was Bane who initiated the charge. Once again, their training sabers rained down, and once again, they broke apart with both combatants unscathed. This time, however, the outcome of the battle was no longer in doubt. Bane hung his head and lowered his blade in an admission of defeat. The last pass, he had held Cassim off, but with each swing of his saber, he had grown a microsecond slower. Fatigue was setting in. Even the forest couldn't keep his muscles fresh forever, and the seemingly endless duel had finally taken too great a toll. The Blade Master, on the other hand, had lost almost none of his speed and sharpness. Bane doubted he would get through the next pass, and even if he did, the one after that would bring certain defeat. It was inevitable. So there was no point in pressing to the point that he actually suffered the pain of getting hit. Cassim seemed momentarily surprised at the concession, then nodded in acceptance of the victory.
You were smart to recognize that the battle was over, but I expected you to fight on until the end. There is little honor in surrender.
Honor is a fool's prize, Bane replied, reciting a passage from one of the volumes he had recently read in the archives. Glory is of no use to the dead. After pondering his words for a moment, the Blade Master nodded.
Well said, my young apprentice.
Bane wasn't surprised that Cassim didn't recognize the quote. The words had been written by Darth Revan nearly 3 millennia earlier. The masters were as lax as the students when it came to studying the ancient writings. It seemed the Academy had turned its back on the past champions of the dark side. True, Revan had eventually gone back over to the Jedi and the Light after being betrayed by Darth Malak. Still, Revan and Malak had come within a hair's breadth of wiping out the Republic. It was foolish to discount all they accomplished, and even more foolish to ignore the lessons that could be learned from them. Yet Cordis and the other masters stubbornly refused to spend any time studying the history of the Sith Order. Fortunately for Bane, it was a trait they passed along to their students. It had given him an undeniable advantage over the other apprentices. If nothing else, it had shown him the true potential of the dark side. The archives were filled with accounts of incredible feats of power. Cities laid waste, worlds brought low, entire star systems swallowed up when a Dark Lord caused the sun to go nova. Some of these tales were likely exaggerations, myths that had grown with each retelling before being set down on parchment. Yet they had their roots in truth, and that truth had inspired Bane to push himself farther and faster than he otherwise would have dared. Thinking of Revan and the Sith Lords of the past brought to mind another question that had been troubling him for some time. Master, why don't the Sith use the Darth title anymore?
It was Lord Khan's decision, the Twi'lek told him as he toweled off. The Darth tradition is a relic of the past. It represents what the Sith once were, not what we are now.
Bane shook his head, dissatisfied with the answer.
There has to be more to it than that,
he said, stooping to retrieve the robe he had cast off at the start of their duel.
Lord Khan wouldn't throw out the ancient traditions without justification.
I see you won't be satisfied with the easy answer,
Cassim said with a sigh, pulling on his own robe.
Very well. To understand why the title is no longer used, you must understand what it truly represents. The Darth title was more than just a symbol of power. It was a claim of supremacy. It was used by those Dark Lords who have sought to enforce their will on the other masters. It was a challenge, a warning to bow down or be destroyed.
Bane already knew this from his studies, but he didn't think it was wise to interrupt. Instead, he crossed his legs and lowered himself into a sitting position, looking up at his master and just listening.
Of course, few of the Dark Lords would ever submit to another's will for long,
Cassim continued.
Wherever one of our order took up the Darth title, deception and betrayal were always close at hand to snatch it away. There can be no peace for a master who dares to use the Darth name.
Peace is a lie,
Bane replied.
There is only passion.
Cassim raised an eyebrow in exasperation.
Peace was a poor choice of words. What I meant was stability. Those masters who chose the Darth title spent as much time guarding against their supposed allies as they did battling the Jedi. Khan wanted to put an end to such wastefulness.
From where he sat, it seemed to Bane as if the Blade Master was trying to convince himself as much as his student.
Khan wants us to focus all our resources on our true enemy instead of one another,
Cassim asserted.
That is why we are all equals in the Brotherhood of Darkness.
Equality is a myth to protect the weak, Bane argued. Some of us are strong in the Force, others are not. Only a fool believes otherwise.
There are other reasons the Darth title was abandoned, Cassim insisted with just a hint of frustration. It attracted the attention of the Jedi, for one. It revealed our leaders to the enemy. It gave them easy targets to eliminate.
Bane still wasn't convinced. The Jedi knew who the real leaders of the Sith were. Whether they called themselves Darth or Lord or Master made no difference. But he could tell the Twi'lek wasn't comfortable with the discussion, and he knew enough to let the matter drop. Forgive me, Lord Cassim, he said, bowing his head. I meant no offense. I only sought to draw upon your wisdom to explain that which I could not understand myself. Cassim looked down at him with the same expression he had used when Bane had abruptly ended their duel a few moments earlier. Eventually he asked,
So now you see the wisdom behind Lord Khan's decision to end the tradition?
Of course, Bane lied. He's acting for the good of us all. As he rose to his feet, he thought, Khan's acting like one of the Jedi, worrying about the greater good, seeking to bring harmony and cooperation to our order. The dark side withers and dies under those conditions. Cassim stared at Bane as if he wanted to say more. In the end, however, he let it drop.
That's enough for today, he said.
In the distance, the sky had turned the faint gray of first light. Dawn was only an hour away.
The other students will be arriving for their training soon.
Bane bowed once more before taking his leave. As he made his way down the temple steps, he realized that Cassim, for all his skill with the lightsaber, couldn't teach him what he really needed to know. The Twi'lek had turned his back on the past. He'd abandoned the individualistic roots of the Sith in favor of Khan's brotherhood. The mysteries of the dark side's true potential were beyond his reach, and likely beyond the reach of every master at the Academy. Githany could sense that something was troubling Bane. He was barely paying attention as she shared what she had learned from the Sith Masters in her most recent lessons. She didn't know what was bothering him. In truth, she didn't care. Unless it interfered with her own plans. Something's on your mind, Bane, she whispered. Lost in his thoughts, he took a moment to react. I'm sorry, Githany. What's wrong? She pressed, trying to sound genuinely concerned. What are you thinking about? He didn't answer at first. He seemed to be weighing his words carefully before speaking. Do you believe in the power of the dark side? He asked.
Of course.
And is it what you envisioned? Does the Academy live up to your expectations?
Few things ever do, she replied with a hint of a smile. But I've learned a lot from Cordis and the others since I've come here. Things the Jedi could never have taught me.
Bane gave a derisive snort. Most of what I've learned has come from these books. He waved a hand at the shelves. She wasn't sure what to say next, so she said nothing. You once told me the Masters didn't know everything, Bane continued. You meant the Jedi Masters at the time, but I'm starting to believe it applies to the Sith as well.
They were wrong to turn their backs on you, she said, seeing the opportunity she had long been waiting for. But you have to place your blame where it belongs. We both know who's responsible for doing this to you.
Sirak, he said, spitting out the name as if it were poison. He must pay for what he did to you, Bane. We've waited long enough. It's time.
Time for what? Githany allowed the hint of a tremor into her voice.
Tomorrow morning, I'm going to challenge him in the dueling ring.
What?
Bane shook his head.
Don't be stupid, Githany. He'll destroy you.
Perfect, she thought. I have no choice, Bane, she said gravely. I've already told you I don't believe in the legend of the Sithari. Sirak may be the top student in the school, but he's not invincible.
He may not be the Sithari, but he's still too strong for you. You can't face him in the dueling ring, Githany. I've studied him. I know how good he is. You can't beat him.
She let his words hang in the air for a long time before dropping her head in defeat.
What other choice is there? We have to destroy him. And the only way is by facing him in the dueling ring.
Bane didn't reply right away. She knew he was mulling over another solution.
They both knew there was only one possible course of action, one answer he would inevitably come to. They'd have to kill Serac outside the ring. Assassinate him.
It was a blatant violation of the Academy's rules, and the consequences would be severe if they were caught. That's why it had to be Bane who came up with the idea.
Once it was out there, Githany was confident she could maneuver him into performing the actual deed by himself. It was the perfect plan. Get rid of Serac, and have Bane assume all the risk.
Later she could accidentally tip off the Masters about Bane's involvement, if she needed to. She wasn't so sure about that part of her plan anymore, though. She wasn't convinced she wanted to betray Bane, but she didn't mind manipulating him. He drew in a long breath, gathering himself to speak. She prepared herself to give a very convincing and very contrived exclamation of surprise.
"You can't face Serac in the ring, but I can," he said.
"What?"
Githany's surprise was completely genuine.
"He nearly beat you to death last time. He'll kill you for sure this time."
"This time I intend to win."
The way he spoke made Githany realize she was missing something.
"What's going on, Bane?" she demanded.
He hesitated a moment before admitting,
"I've been training with Lord Cassim, in secret."
That made sense, she saw.
In fact, she should have figured it out on her own.
"Maybe you would have if you hadn't let Bane get to you," she chided herself.
"You knew you were starting to have feelings for him. You let them cloud your judgment."
Out loud, she said,
"I don't like being played for a fool, Bane."
"Neither do I," he said. "I'm not stupid, Githany. I know what you wanted from me. I know what you expected me to say. I will get my revenge on Serac. But I'm taking my own path."
Without even realizing it, she had begun chewing on her lower lip.
"When?"
"Tomorrow morning. Just as you said you were going to.
But you know I wasn't serious, and you know I am."
Unbidden, Githany's finger began to twine itself in a lock of her hair. She pulled her arm down sharply as soon as she realized what she was doing. Bane reached out a hand and let it rest gently on her shoulder.
"You don't have to worry," he reassured her. "Nobody will know you were involved."
"That's not what I'm worried about," she whispered.
He tilted his head to one side, studying her closely to see if she was being honest with him. Much to her own surprise, she actually was. Bane must have sensed her sincerity because he leaned in close and kissed her softly on the lips. He drew back slowly, letting his hand slip from her shoulder. Without another word, he rose to his feet and made his way toward the door leading out of the archives. She watched him go in silence, then at the last second called out,
"Good luck, Bane. Be careful."
He stopped, as if he'd taken a blaster bolt in the throat, his body rigid.
"I will,"
he replied, without looking back. And then he was gone. Moments later, Githany felt her face burning. She absently brushed away a tear coiling down her cheek, then brought her hand up slowly, staring in disbelief at the moisture smeared across her palm. Disgusted at her own weakness, she wiped the tear away on the folds of her cloak. She stood up from the chair and threw her shoulders back, bracing her spine and holding her head high and proud. So what if things hadn't quite gone according to plan? If Bane killed Serac in the ring, her rival would still be dead. And if Bane failed, she could always find someone else to assassinate the Zabrak. It would all work out the same in the end. But as she marched smartly from the room, part of her knew that wasn't true. No matter how this played out, things were going to be very different from anything she had imagined. The morning sky was dark with storm clouds. Far in the distance, thunder could be heard rumbling across the empty plains that separated the temple from the Valley of the Dark Lords. Bane hadn't slept that night. After his confrontation with Githany, he'd returned to his room to meditate. Even that had proved difficult. His mind was churning with too many thoughts to properly focus. Memories of the gruesome beating he'd suffered kept forcing themselves to the fore, dragging doubt and the fear of failure behind them. So far, he'd managed to resist the whispers that threatened his resolve, and he'd stayed firm in his original plan. The apprentices were gathering, some casting sour glances at the clouds overhead. The temple roof was completely exposed to the elements, but no matter how wet, cold, and miserable the students got, they knew the drills and challenges would not be cancelled. A little rain was nothing to a Sith, Cassim was fond of saying. Bane found his place amid the throng in preparation for the group drills. The apprentices around him studiously ignored his presence. It had been this way ever since his loss to Sirak. He was shunned. He had become anathema to the other students. Though he trained with them in all the group sessions, it was as if he didn't really exist. He was a silent shadow, lurking on the fringes, excluded in spirit, if not an actual physical presence. He scanned the crowd for Githany, but when he caught her eye, she quickly looked away. Still, he found her presence reassuring. He believed she wanted him to succeed, or at least part of her did. He believed that some of what they felt for each other was more than just part of the game they had both been playing. As the drills began, he made a point not to look over at Sirak. He had studied the Zabrak in excruciating detail over the past months. Anything he happened to notice now would only cause him to second-guess himself. Instead, he focused on his own technique. In the past, he had purposefully worked errors and mistakes into his routines during the drills in order to keep his growing talent hidden from any student who might happen to cast a glance in his direction. Now, however, the time for secrecy was gone. After the challenges today, everyone would know what he was capable of, or he would be dead and forgotten forever. The rain began to come down. Slowly at first, fat, heavy drops spaced enough apart that he could make out the sound as each one landed. Then the clouds opened up, and the rain came in a steady, pounding rhythm. Bane barely even noticed. He'd escaped inside himself, digging down deep to confront his fear. As his body went through the motions of basic attack and defense stances, along with the rest of the class, he slowly transformed the fear into anger. It was impossible for Bane to say how long the training session lasted. It seemed to go on forever. But in actual fact, Cassim probably kept it brief in light of the steady downpour soaking his charges. By the time it ended, and the apprentices had gathered into the familiar circle around the dueling ring, the young man had turned his seething anger into white-hot hate. As he had done the last time he challenged Sirak, he entered the ring before anyone else had a chance to act, pushing his way through the crowd from his position on the outermost edge. There was a murmur of surprise when the others recognized who had stepped forward. He could feel the dark side churning inside him, a storm far fiercer than the one pelting down on him from the sky. It was time for his hate to set him free. "Sirak!" he shouted, his voice carrying over the rising wind. "I challenge you!" Chapter 17. Bane's challenge hung in the air, as if the relentless sheets of rain had somehow trapped his words. Through the darkness of the storm, he saw the crowd part, and Sirak stepped slowly forward. The Zabrak moved with a quiet confidence. Bane had hoped the unexpected challenge might unsettle his enemy. If he could rattle Sirak, catch him off guard, or confuse him, he would have an advantage before the fight even began. But if his opponent felt anything at all, he kept it carefully masked beneath a cold, calm veneer. Sirak handed his long, double-bladed training saber to Yivra, one of the Zabrak siblings who always seemed to follow in his wake, then stripped off his heavy rain-soaked cloak. Beneath his robes, he wore a simple pair of breeches and a sleeveless vest. Without a word, he held out his balled-up cloak, and Loke, the other Zabrak, scampered out from the crowd and took it from him. Then Yivra scurried in to return his weapon to his open and waiting hand. Bane peeled off his own cloak and let it drop to the ground, trying to ignore the cold sting of the rain on his naked torso. He hadn't really expected Sirach to be flustered by his challenge, but at the very least he'd hoped the Zabrak would be overconfident. There was, however, a ruthless efficiency in Sirach's preparation, an economy and precision of movement that told Bane he was taking this duel very seriously. Sirach was arrogant, but he was no fool. He was smart enough to understand that Bane wouldn't challenge him again unless he thought he had some plan for victory. Until he understood what that plan was, he wasn't going to take his opponent for granted. Bane knew he could probably beat Sirach now. Like Githany, he didn't believe in the legend of a chosen one who would rise up from the Sith ranks. He was convinced Sirach was not, in fact, the Sithari. He didn't want to just beat him, however. He wanted to destroy him, just as Sirach had destroyed him in their last meeting. But Sirach was too good. He'd never leave himself exposed the way Bane had, not at first. Not unless Bane somehow lured him into it. Across the ring, Sirach assumed the ready position. His rain-slicked skin seemed to glow in the darkness, a yellow demon emerging from the shadows of a nightmare into reality's harsh light. Bane leapt forward, opening the melee with a series of complex, aggressive attacks. He moved quickly, but not too quickly. There were gasps of astonishment from the crowd at his obvious and unexpected skill, though Sirach turned aside his assault easily enough. In response to the inevitable counterattack, Bane let himself stagger back into a stumbling retreat. For a brief instant, he saw his opponent overextend, leaving his right arm vulnerable to a strike that would have ended the contest right then and there. Fighting his own finely honed instincts, Bane held back. He'd worked too long and too hard to claim victory with a simple blow to the arm. The battle continued in the familiar rhythm of combat, the ebb and flow of attack and defense. Bane made sure his attacks were effective, yet crude, trying to convince his enemy that he was a dangerous, but ultimately inferior opponent. Each time he warded off one of Sirach's charges, he embellished his defensive maneuvers, transforming quick parries into long, clumsy swipes that seemed to keep the double-bladed saber at bay as much as through blind luck as intention. With the surge and swell of each exchange, Bane gently prodded with the force, testing and searching for a weakness he could exploit. It took only a few minutes until he recognized it. Despite his training, the Zabrak had no real experience in long, drawn-out battles. None of his opponents had ever lasted long enough to truly push him. Imperceptibly, the strikes of his foe became less crisp, the counters less precise, and the transitions less elegant as Sirach gradually wore down. The fog of exhaustion was slowly clouding his mind, and Bane knew it was only a matter of time until he made a crucial and fatal miscalculation. Yet even though he was battling the Zabrak, Bane's real struggle was with himself. Time and again he had to pull back to keep from lunging through an opening presented by his enemy's increasingly desperate assault. He understood that the crushing victory he sought would only come through patience, a virtue not normally encouraged in followers of the dark side. In the end, his patience was rewarded. Sirach became more and more frustrated as he continually tried and failed to bring his bumbling, stumbling opponent down. As the prolonged physical exertion began to take its toll, his swings became wild and reckless until he abandoned all pretense of defense in an effort to end the duel he sensed was slipping away from him. When the Zabrak's desperation turned to hopelessness, every impulse in Bane screamed with the desire to take the initiative and end the fight. Instead, he let the tantalizing closeness of Sirach's defeat feed his appetite for vengeance. The hunger grew with each passing second until it became a physical pain, tearing away at his insides. The dark side filled him, and he felt it on the verge of ripping him apart, splitting his skin and gushing out like a fountain of black blood. He waited until the last possible second before unleashing the energy bottled up inside him in a tremendous rush of power. He channeled it through his muscles and limbs, moving so fast it seemed as if time had stopped for the rest of the world. In the blink of an eye, he knocked the saber from Sirach's hand, sliced down to shatter his forearm, then spun through and brought his saber crashing into his opponent's lower leg. It splintered under the impact, and Sirach screamed as a shard of gleaming white bone sliced through muscle, sinew, and finally, skin. For an instant, none of the spectators was even aware of what had happened. It took their minds a moment to catch up and register the blur of action that had occurred so much quicker than their eyes could see. Sirach lay crumpled on the ground, writhing in agony and clutching with his one good hand at the chunk of bone protruding from his shin. Bane hesitated a split second before moving in to finish him off, savoring the moment and giving Cassim the opportunity to intervene.
Enough!
The blade master shouted, and the apprentice obeyed, freezing his saber, even in the act of chopping it down on his helpless foe.
It's over, Bane.
Slowly, Bane lowered his saber and stepped away. The fury and focus that had turned him into a conduit of the dark side's unstoppable power was gone, replaced by a hyper-conscious awareness of his physical surroundings. He was standing atop the temple roof, in the middle of a raging storm, drenched in cold rain, his body half frozen. He began to shiver as he cast about the ground for his discarded cloak. He picked it up, but finding it soaked completely through, didn't bother to put it on. Cassim stepped from the crowd, smoothly placing himself between Bane and the helpless Zabrak.
"You have witnessed an amazing victory today,"
he told the assembled throng, shouting to be heard above the pounding rain.
"Bane's triumph was as much a result of his brilliant strategy as his superior skill."
Bane was barely listening to the words. He merely stood in the center of the ring, silent, save for the chattering of his teeth.
He was patient and careful. He didn't just want to defeat his opponent. He wanted to destroy him.
He achieved Dun Mok, not because he was better than Sirach, but because he was smarter.
The blade master reached out a hand and placed it on Bane's bare shoulder.
"Let this be a lesson to you all," he concluded. "Secrecy can be your greatest weapon. Keep your true strength hidden until you are ready to unleash the killing blow."
He let go of Bane's shoulder and whispered,
"You should go inside before you catch a chill."
Then he turned to address the stunned Zabrak sibling standing at the edge of the circled students.
"Take Sirach down to the med center."
As they moved forward to carry their moaning and barely conscious champion away, Bane turned toward the stairs. Cassim was right. He had to get out of the rain. Feeling strangely surreal, he walked stiffly toward the stairs that led into the warmth and shelter of the rooms below. The crowd parted quickly to let him through. Most of the other apprentices were staring at him with expressions of fear and open wonder, yet he barely noticed. He descended the steps to the temple's main floor, walking in a stupor that was broken only when he heard Githany call his name.
"Bane!"
she shouted, and he turned to see her hurrying down the stairs after him. Her drenched hair was plastered haphazardly to her face and forehead. Her soaked clothes clung tightly to her body, accentuating every curve of her shapely form. She was breathing hard, though whether from excitement or the exertion of catching up to him, he couldn't say. He waited at the base of the stairs as she approached. She ran down the steps toward him, and for a moment he thought she would continue on into his arms. At the last second, she stopped, however, and stood mere centimeters from him. Githany took a second to catch her breath before she spoke. When she did, her words were harsh, though her voice was low.
"What happened up there? Why didn't you kill him?"
Part of him had been expecting this reaction, though another part of him was hoping she had come to congratulate him on his victory. He couldn't help but feel disappointed.
"He sent me to the Bacta tank in our first duel. Now I've done the same to him," he replied. "That's vengeance."
"That's foolish," she shot back. "You think Sirach's going to just forget about this? He'll come after you again, Bane.
just like you came after him. That's the way this works. You missed your chance to put a permanent end to this feud, and I want to know why.
My blade was raised for the killing blow, Bane reminded her. Lord Cassim stepped in before I could finish Sirak off. The masters don't want one of their top students to end up dead.
No, she said, shaking her head. Your blade was raised, but Cassim didn't stop you. You hesitated. Something held you back.
Bane knew she was right. He had hesitated. He just wasn't sure why.
He tried to explain it to Githany and himself.
I've already killed one foe in the ring. Cordus chastised me for Forharg's death. He warned me not to let it happen again.
I guess
I was worried about what the masters would do to me if I killed another apprentice.
Githany's eyes narrowed in anger.
I thought we'd finally stopped lying to each other, Bane.
It wasn't a lie. Not exactly. But it wasn't entirely accurate either. He shifted uncomfortably, feeling guilty beneath her furious glare.
You couldn't do it, she said, reaching out and jabbing him hard in the chest with her finger. You felt the dark side swallowing you up, and you pulled back.
Now it was Bane's turn to get angry.
You're wrong, he snapped, swiping her accusing hand away. I retreated from the dark side after I killed Forharg. I know how that felt. This is different.
His words carried the righteous weight of truth. Last time, he'd felt hollow inside, as if something had been taken from him. This time, he could still feel the force flowing through him in all its savage glory, filling him with its heat and power. This time, the dark side remained his to command.
Githany wasn't convinced.
You still aren't willing to give yourself fully to the dark side, she said. Sirak showed weakness, and you showed him mercy. That's not the way of the Sith.
What do you know of the ways of the Sith? He shouted. I'm the one who's read the ancient texts, not you! You're stuck learning from masters who've forgotten their past.
Where in the ancient texts does it say to show compassion to a fallen enemy?
She asked, her voice dripping with scorn. Stung by the words, Bane shoved her sharply backward and turned away. She took a quick step to balance herself, but kept her distance.
You're just angry because your plan fell apart, he muttered,
suddenly unwilling to face her. He wanted to say more, but he knew the rest of the students would be down soon. He didn't want anyone to see them talking together, so he simply walked away and left her standing there alone. Githany followed him with cold, calculating eyes. She'd been impressed watching him toy with Sirak in the ring. He'd seemed invincible. But when he'd failed to kill the helpless Abrak, she was quick to recognize and identify what had happened. It was a flaw in Bane's character, a weakness he refused to recognize. Yet it was there, nonetheless. Once the passion of the moment had faded, once he was no longer driven by the dark side, his seething bloodlust had cooled. He hadn't even been able to kill his most hated enemy without provocation, which meant he probably wouldn't be able to kill Githany if it ever came down to it. Knowing this changed the nature of their relationship once again. Recently, she'd begun to fear Bane, afraid that if he ever turned on her, she wouldn't be strong enough to stand against him. Now she knew that this would never happen. He simply wasn't capable of killing an ally without justification. Fortunately, she didn't have the same limitations.
Bane was still thinking about what Githany had said later that night as he lay in bed, unable to sleep.
Why hadn't he been able to kill Sirak? Was she right? Had he pulled back out of some misguided sense of compassion? He wanted to believe he had embraced the dark side, but if he had, he would have cut Sirak down without a second thought, no matter what the consequences.
However, it was more than this that was bothering him. He was frustrated by how he'd left things with Githany. He was undeniably drawn to her. She was hypnotic and compelling.
Each time she brushed up against him, he felt chills down his spine. Even when they were apart, he often thought of her, memories lingering like the scent of her intoxicating perfume. At night, her long black hair and dangerous eyes haunted his dreams. And he honestly believed she felt something for him, too, though he doubted she would ever admit it. Yet as close as they'd become during their secret lessons together, they'd never consummated their yearning. It just seemed wrong while Sirach was still the top apprentice at the academy. Defeating him had been the underlying goal for each of them. Neither one had wanted any distractions from that goal. He was a common foe that united them to a single cause. But in many ways, he had also been a wall, keeping them apart. Taking Sirach down should have leveled that wall into rubble. But Bane had seen the disappointment in Githany's face after the battle. He'd promised to kill their enemy, and she'd believed in him. Yet in the end, his actions had proved he wasn't up to her expectations, and the wall between them had suddenly grown much, much stronger. Someone knocked softly at the door of his chamber. It was well after curfew. None of the apprentices had any reason to be in the halls. He could think of only one person who might be wandering the halls at this hour. Leaping from his bed, he crossed the floor in one quick stride and yanked open the door. He quickly masked his disappointment at seeing Lord Cassim standing beyond the threshold. The Blade Master stepped through the open door without waiting for an invitation. He gave Bane a nod that told him to close it once he was inside. Bane did as he was bidden, wondering at the purpose of the unannounced late-night visit.
"I have something for you,"
the Twi'lek said, brushing away the folds of his cloak and reaching for his lightsaber on his belt. No, Bane realized, not his lightsaber. The handle of Cassim's weapon was noticeably longer than most, allowing it to house two crystals, one to power each blade. This hilt was smaller, and it was fashioned with a strange curve, giving it a hooked appearance. The Blade Master ignited the lightsaber. Its single blade burned a dark red.
"This was the weapon of my master," he told Bane. "As a young child, I would watch for hours as my master performed his drills. My earliest memories are of dancing ruby lights, moving through the sequences of battle."
"You don't remember your parents?"
Bane asked, surprised. Cassim shook his head.
"My parents were sold in the slave markets of Nalhutta. That's where Master Nadaz found me. He noticed my family on the auction blocks. Perhaps he was drawn to them because we were Twi'leks like himself. Even though I was barely old enough to stand, Master Nadaz could sense the force in me. He purchased me and took me back to Ryloth to raise me as his apprentice among our own people."
"What happened to your parents?"
"I don't know,"
Cassim replied with an indifferent shrug.
"They had no special connection to the Force, so my master saw no reason to purchase them. They were weak, and so they were left behind."
He spoke casually, as if the knowledge that his parents had lived and probably died as slaves in the service of the Hutts had no effect on him whatsoever. In a way, his apathy was understandable. He'd never known his parents, so he had no emotional ties to them, good or bad. Bane briefly wondered how his own life might have been different if he had been raised by someone else. If Hurst had been killed in the Cortosis mines when he was just an infant, would he still have ended up here at the Academy on Korriban?
"My master was a great Sith Lord,"
Cassim continued.
"He was particularly adept in the arts of lightsaber combat, a skill he passed on to me. He taught me how to use the double-bladed lightsaber, though, as you can see, he preferred a more traditional design for himself. Except for the handle, of course."
The blade flickered out of existence as he shut off the weapon and tossed it to Bane, who caught it easily, wrapping his hand around the hooked handle.
"It feels strange," he muttered.
"It requires a minor variation in your grip,"
Cassim explained. "Hold it more in the palm, farther away from the fingertips." Bane did as instructed, letting his body grow accustomed to the odd heft and balance. Already his mind was beginning to run through the implications of the new grip. It would give the wielder more power on his overhand strikes, and it would change the angle of the attacks by the merest fraction of a degree. just enough to confuse and disorient an unsuspecting opponent.
Some moves are more difficult with this particular weapon, Kasim warned, but many others are far more effective. In the end, I think you'll find this lightsaber will suit your personal style quite well.
You're giving this to me? Bane asked incredulously.
Today, you proved you were worthy of it.
There was just a hint of pride in the Blademaster's voice.
Bane ignited it, listening to the sweet hum of the power pack and the crackling hiss of the energy blade. He performed a few simple flourishes, then abruptly shut it off.
Does Cordis approve?
The decision is mine, not his,
Kasim stated. He almost sounded offended.
I haven't held on to this blade for 10 years, just so Cordis can decide who I give it to.
Bane answered with a respectful bow, fully aware of the great honor that Kasim had just bestowed upon him. To fill the uncomfortable silence that followed, he asked,
Your master gave you this when he died?
I took it when I killed him.
Bane was so stunned that he couldn't cover his reaction. The Blade Master saw it and smiled slightly.
I had learned everything I could from Master Nadaz. As strong as he was in the dark side, I was stronger. As skilled as he was with the lightsaber, I became better.
But why kill him? Bane asked.
A test. To see if I was as strong as I believed. This was before Lord Khan rose to power. We were still trapped in the old ways. Sith versus Sith, master versus apprentice. Foolishly pitting ourselves against one another to prove our dominance. Fortunately, the Brotherhood of Darkness put an end to all that.
Not completely, Bane muttered, thinking of Thorharg and Sirak. The weak still fall to the strong. It's inevitable.
Kasim tilted his head to the side, trying to gauge the meaning behind his words.
Don't allow yourself to be blinded by this honor, he warned. You are not ready to challenge me, young apprentice. I have taught you everything you know, but I haven't taught you everything I know.
Bane couldn't help but smile. The notion of facing Kasim in a real fight was preposterous. He knew he was no match for the Blademaster. Not yet.
I will keep that in mind, Master.
Satisfied, Kasim turned to go. Just before Bane closed the door behind him, he added,
Lord Cordis wants to see you first thing in the morning. Go to his chambers before the morning drills.
Even the sobering prospect of meeting with the Academy's grim overseer couldn't dampen Bane's elated spirit. As soon as he was alone in his room, he reignited the lightsaber and began practicing his sequences. It was many hours before he finally put the weapon away and crawled wearily into bed, all thoughts of Githany long banished from his mind. The morning's first light found Bane at the door, leading into the private quarters of Lord Cordis. It had been many months since he had last been here. At the time, he had been chastised for killing Thorharg. This time, he had severely injured one of the top students of the academy, one of Cordis's personal favorites. He wondered what was in store for him. Summoning his courage, he knocked once.
Enter,
came the voice from within. Trying to ignore a feeling of trepidation, Bane did as he was told. Lord Cordis was in the center of the room, kneeling on his meditation mat. It was almost as if he hadn't moved. His position was exactly the same as it had been at their last meeting.
Master,
Bane said, making a low bow.
Cordis didn't bother to rise.
I see you have a lightsaber on your belt. Lord Kasim gave it to me. He felt I earned it with my latest victory in the ring.
Bane suddenly felt very defensive, as if he was under attack.
I have no wish to contradict the Blademaster,
Cordis replied, though his tone suggested the opposite.
However, though you now carry a lightsaber, do not forget that you are still an apprentice. You still owe your obedience and allegiance to the masters here at the academy.
Of course, Lord Cordis.
The way in which you defeated Sirak has left quite an impression on the other students.
Cordis continued.
They will look to emulate you now. You must set an example for them.
I will do my best, Master,
That means your private sessions with Githany must end.
A chill washed over Bane.
You knew? I am a Sith Lord and Master of this Academy. I am not a fool, and I am not blind to what is happening within the walls of the Temple. I tolerated such behavior when you were an outcast because it did no harm to the other apprentices. Now, however, many of the students will be watching you closely. I do not want them following your path and trying to train one another in a misguided attempt to duplicate your success. What will happen to Githany? Will she be punished?
I will speak with her just as I am speaking with you. It must be clear to the rest of the apprentices that the two of you are not training together in private. That means you cannot see her anymore. You must avoid all contact except in the group lessons. If you both obey me on this, there will be no further consequences.
Bane understood Lord Cordis's concerns, but he felt the solution went too far. There was no need to cut him off from Githany so completely. He wondered if the Masters knew of his attraction to her. Did they fear she would be a distraction? No, he realized that wasn't it. This was simply about control. Bane had defied Lord Cordis. He had succeeded despite being shunned by the rest of the Academy. Now Cordis wanted to claim ownership of Bane's accomplishments.
That is not all,
Cordis continued, interrupting Bane's thoughts.
You must also put an end to your study of the archives.
Why?
Bane burst out, surprised and angry.
The manuscripts contain the wisdom of the ancient Sith. I have learned much about the ways of the dark side from them.
The archives are relics of the past,
Cordis countered sharply.
They are from a time that has long since vanished. The order has changed. We have evolved beyond what you learned in those musty scrolls and tomes. You would understand this if you had been studying with the Masters instead of rushing off on your own path.
You're the one who forced me down that path, Bane thought.
The Sith may have changed, but we can still build on the knowledge of those who came before us. Surely you understand that, Master. Why else would you have rebuilt the Academy on Korriban?
There was a flash of anger in the Dark Lord's eyes. He obviously didn't like being challenged by one of his students. When he spoke, his voice was cold and menacing.
The dark side is strong on this world. That is the only reason we chose to come here.
Bane knew he should let the matter drop, but he wasn't ready to back down. This was too important.
But what about the Valley of the Dark Lords? What about the tombs of all the Dark Masters buried on Korriban, and the secrets hidden inside them?
Is that what you seek?
Cordis sneered.
The secrets of the dead. The Jedi pillaged the tombs when Korriban fell to them 3,000 years ago. Nothing of value remains.
The Jedi are servants of the light,
Bane protested.
The dark side has secrets they will never understand. There may be something they missed.
Cordis laughed, a harsh and scornful bark.
Ha! Are you really so naive? The spirits of powerful Sith Masters are said to linger in their tombs,
Bane insisted, stubbornly refusing to be cowed.
They appear only to those who are worthy. They would not have revealed themselves to the Jedi. Do you really believe ghosts and spirits still linger in their graves, waiting to pass on the great mysteries of the dark side to those who seek them out?
Bane's thoughts turned back to his studies. There were too many such accounts, documented in the archives, to be mere legend. There had to be some truth to it.
Yes,
he answered, though he knew it would infuriate Cordis even more.
I believe I can learn more from the ghosts in the Valley of the Dark Lords than the living masters here at the Academy.
Cordis leapt to his feet and slapped Bane hard across his face, his talon-like fingernails drawing blood. Bane held his ground. He didn't even flinch.
You are an impudent fool,
his master shouted.
You worship those who are dead and gone. You think they hold some great power?
But they are nothing but dust and bone.
You're wrong, Bane said. He could feel the blood welling up in the scratches on his face, but he didn't reach up to wipe it away. He simply stood still as stone in front of his seething master. Even though Bane didn't move, Cordis took half a step back. When he spoke, his voice was more composed, though it still dripped with anger.
Get out,
he said, extending a long, bony finger toward the door.
If you value the wisdom of the dead so much, then go! Leave the temple! Go to the Valley of the Dark Lords! Find your answers in their tombs!
Bane hesitated. He knew this was a test. If he apologized now, if he groveled and begged the forgiveness of his master, Cordis would probably let him stay. But he knew Cordis was wrong. The ancient Sith were dead, but their legacy remained. This was his chance to claim it as his own. He turned his back on Lord Cordis and marched from the room without a word. There was no point in continuing the argument. The only way he could win was by finding proof. And he wasn't going to find it standing here.
Chapter 18.
Bane had missed the morning practice session. It wasn't hard for Cassim to figure out who was responsible for his absence. He didn't bother to knock on Lord Cordis's door. He simply used the force to burst apart the lock, then kicked it open. Unfortunately, the element of surprise he'd been hoping for had been lost. Cordis had his back to the door, examining one of the magnificent tapestries that hung beside his oversized bed. He didn't turn when the Blade Master burst in. He didn't react at all, which meant he'd been expecting the intrusion. Cassim gestured violently with his hand, and the door slammed shut. What he was about to say wasn't for the ears of the students.
What in blazes did you do, Cordis?
I assume you are referring to Apprentice Bane,
came the too casual reply.
Of course I griffing mean Bane.
No more games, Cordis. What did you do to him?
To him? Nothing. Not in the way you're thinking. I merely tried to reason with him. Tried to make him understand the necessity of working within the structure of this institution.
You manipulated him,
Cassim said with a sigh of resignation. He knew Cordis had no fondness for Bane. Not with Lord Kopesh, his longtime rival, being the one who brought him here. The Blade Master realized he should have warned the young apprentice to be on his guard.
You twisted his mind somehow,
he continued, trying to draw out a reaction.
You forced him down a path you wanted him to take. A path of ruin.
There was no immediate reply. Tired of staring at Cordis's back, he stepped forward and reached up to grab the taller man by the shoulder, whirling him around to face him.
Why, Cordis?
In the first brief second that the overseer of the academy was spun around, Cassim caught a glimpse of uncertainty and confusion in the gaunt, drawn features. Then, those features twisted into a mask of rage, dark eyes burning in sunken sockets. Cordis slapped Cassim's hand away.
Bane brought this on himself. He was willful, obsessed with the past. He is of no use to us until he accepts the teachings of this academy.
Cassim was taken aback. Not by the sudden outburst, but by the unexpected glimpse of uncertainty that had preceded it. Suddenly he wondered if maybe the meeting hadn't gone exactly as planned. Perhaps Cordis had tried to manipulate Bane and failed. It wouldn't be the first time they'd underestimated their unusual apprentice. Now Cassim felt more curious than angry.
Tell me what happened, Cordis. Where is Bane now?
Cordis sighed, almost regretful.
He's gone into the wastelands. He's heading for the Valley of the Dark Lords.
What? Why would he do that?
I told you, he's obsessed with the past. He believes there are secrets out there that will be revealed to him. Secrets of the dark side.
Did you warn him of the dangers? The Pelkor swarms, the Tukata?
And never gave me a chance. He wouldn't have listened anyway.
That much at least Cassim believed. Yet he wasn't sure if he trusted the rest of Cordis's story. The master of the academy was subtle, crafty. It would be just like him to trick someone into